Welcome to the Moose Room, everybody. Today, it's just me, Dr. Joe, because it's that time of year. We're getting to that point where it's really difficult to get everyone together. And that's just the way it is. So there's going to be some weird weeks thrown in here because of our inability to match our schedules. It's just the way it is. Traveling everywhere. Everyone's busy. That's just how it goes with extension sometimes. Today, we're going to talk about feedlot stuff. I have been working on some new analogies for stress in the feedlot and how to look at risk in cattle. I'm going to throw it out to you guys. You tell me if you like it, if it makes sense, all those things. So one of my frustrations when we look at feedlot cattle and are evaluating risk is that a lot of times we're always evaluating the risk of the cattle while we may or may not evaluate the risk of the environment that we're going to put those cattle in. And that is absolutely just as important, if not more important, than the risk category that those cattle fall in. So as a review, risk categories for cattle: high risk, low risk. Things we associate with high risk cattle include long travel distance, multiple groups thrown together. So a bunch of cattle coming from different sources without any time together. So they're new to each other. They have not been together for very long, and that mixing of different groups is associated with more sickness, so higher risk. Light in weights. Going into the feedlot, we know that the lighter you put them in, the more opportunities they have to get sick, the more opportunities they have to die. So light in weights, long travel distances, mixing groups, unknown vaccine history plays into this as well. Maybe potentially known vaccine history, but incorrect vaccine history can play into high-risk cattle as well. Those are the basics of high-risk cattle. Now, low-risk cattle are just the opposite. Known history, done well before you got them, short travel distance, all the cattle have been together for quite a while, 45 to 60 days. Backgrounded comes into there as well. So when you background cattle, you have someone else who takes the risk out of that. They take the high risk period, and then you get them, usually at a premium, after they've experienced the highest pieces of risk they're going to experience in that first 45 to 60 days of the feedlot. They're weaned, their bunk broke. All those things have been taken care of for you to reduce some of the risk. So for an example, if I was going to pick the highest risk group that I could possibly make, I would take dairy animals that are picked up at the sale barn, put together the day they were bought from the sale barn, then trucked 400 miles to my farm. And if I really wanted to make them high risk, I would make them all bull calves. So they still need to be castrated, no vaccine history, or I know the vaccine history and they've seen way too many things. These animals have been poked left and right every day for their entire life. That would be the highest risk group I could create. Light in weights, not castrated yet, so I still got to deal with that. Too much vaccine or unknown vaccine history with a long travel distance, that is the ultimate high-risk animal. As opposed to that, the example of the lowest risk group I can create is that long yearling, so they're coming in at 900 to 1,000 pounds, maybe even 1,100 pounds, with a known history, both for treatments and for vaccines, that were bought from the neighbor. Maybe even didn't have to get on a truck, or they just came down the road a couple miles to get to the feedlot. They're castrated, been on bunks. They know exactly what's going on in the feedlot. They're not overconditioned. They are ready to go, and they are bulletproof. That is low-risk cattle. And now there's all different things in between those two descriptions, but those are the extremes, high-risk and low-risk. So now let's get into what do we do with those cattle and why does it matter? Why am I talking about it? Why do I feel strongly about it? Well, the environment those cattle go into, I think we all know, has a big impact on their success. But I think looking at that honestly for what you can provide those animals really, really makes sure that you have the correct expectations for what's going to happen in terms of performance, morbidity, mortality, all those things on your feedlot. It also helps you plan your business plan and where you need to prioritize improvements or opportunities for improvement that exist because of how honest you're being about your feedlot and how it works and how it operates and what kind of cattle you should really be buying for your operation. One of the biggest opportunities for picking up a big margin on cattle is with high-risk cattle because everyone knows they're high-risk and you can pick them up for less money. But the caveat is if you're going to do that and capture that margin, you have to put them in the lowest risk environment possible to make sure that you are taking care of these really highly stressed, high risk cattle that are really prone to becoming ill because they're so high risk, they're so stressed, they're so ready to break with disease if you don't take care of them as perfectly as possible. That brings us to the risk that we need to pair with our cattle risk categories is our environment, our operational risk categories. And it's not difficult. We're not going to make 10 different categories. We're going to keep it high and low risk. So if I have high risk cattle, they need to go into a low risk environment. Because if I take high risk cattle and put them in a high risk environment, I'm creating a disaster. That is where we see those 20 to 30% mortality problems with 50 to 100% morbidity. Morbidity just meaning sickness or treatments or illness, however you want to think about it. High-risk cattle going into a high-risk environment is a train wreck. If you're going to buy high-risk cattle, you must pair that with a low-risk environment to manage that risk. So we've been talking about high-risk cattle, buying high-risk cattle, because a lot of people do. And it's because there's a lot of high-risk cattle out there. But we can still screw things up if we buy low-risk cattle and we put them in a high-risk environment. We can take those cattle, especially given enough time to screw it up, and take them from low-risk and create high-risk cattle by putting them in a high-risk environment. You can stress an animal out over time if you short the incorrect things and you are messing with them and your handling isn't very good and your nutrition isn't on point. Yeah, you can certainly screw up a low-risk animal, but it's less likely than screwing up a high-risk animal. So if you know your operation has a high-risk environment that you're going to put them in, you need to buy low-risk cattle or you're going to have a train wreck. So the last category in all this is buying low-risk cattle, putting them in a low-risk environment. That is a great business plan. But a lot of times it can come with pretty tight margins because you're paying a premium for low-risk cattle and you're putting them in an environment that you have to put work into to make low risk. So the margins can be tighter. And that's why you see a lot of people that build platforms and operations that work solely on buying those high-risk cattle because they can get them at a low price. And then they depend on their ability to create a low-risk environment for those cattle and mitigate that risk through management to capture that margin. There can be all sorts of reasons to buy low-risk cattle and put them in a low-risk environment. We're always striving for that low-risk environment if we can, absolutely. But a lot of that comes down to labor, time, facilities, other resources. Sometimes you have a day job and you need that facility to be as low risk as possible because you can't be there all the time. And that peace of mind can be purchased by buying low risk cattle and then trying to put them in a low risk environment. So there's all sorts of things that comes down to just basically being risk averse in a lot of ways. Low risk cattle in a low risk environment, maybe a tight margin, maybe not, but maybe a tight margin. And it's for the risk averse. And that's totally fine. It can work. I've seen it work plenty. So I've been rambling for quite a while about low versus high risk environments and how you match that with cattle based on what you're trying to accomplish. Of course, having a low risk environment is ideal if we can get there with labor, time, facilities. Sometimes we can't. And that just means that we have to be honest about what's going on with our operation. And if it is high risk, then we need to be careful about purchasing high risk cattle and try to make sure we purchase low risk cattle when possible. So what makes an environment high risk or low risk? Well, when I say environment, I'm talking about everything that cow experiences in your operation. I'm not just talking about weather. Weather is part of it. That's one of the things we cannot control in some ways, you know, unless you have a building. But even then, we can't control everything to do with the weather. There's a lot of things under our control. And I've already talked about one of them. One of them is where you get your cattle from, the source. You can choose whether you're buying high-risk or low-risk cattle. That's one choice you have that's under your control. After that, the environmental side, what we're looking at is bunk space, pen space, nutrition, husbandry, basic husbandry, low-stress handling, water, ventilation, and then how you handle your vaccine and treatment protocols. All of that goes into the environment that you're creating on your operation and whether or not it becomes a high risk environment or a low risk environment. The point of a lot of this is to look at cattle and know that we have a buffer for stress. There's usually an amount of stress that cattle can handle. So the analogy for me is a cup. We're going to think about cattle as a cup. Now they have a buffer in that cup for stress. So as they feel stress, we fill the cup up. As they experience things that are not ideal, we start to pour more in that cup. And if we do that often enough or with big enough stress events, we will cause that cup to overflow. And that correlates to those cattle breaking with disease. High-risk cattle have a cup that is almost all the way full already. So they are more likely to break and overflow that cup with even just small amounts of stress because they have eliminated their buffer for stress. They've used that up. So when we take high-risk cattle, put them in a low-risk environment, we're decreasing the amount in that cup over time to where they do now have, again, a buffer for stress. And that protects you against things that are in your control and may or may not be in your control, like weather or mixing errors, things like that. Now, low-risk cattle come in with a built-in buffer. Their cup is not that full to begin with. You can put them in higher-risk situations on the environment side because they have a buffer against stress. We can fill up that cup a little bit without it overflowing. So hopefully that makes sense. The cup is the cattle. When it overflows, they break. And we can add to that cup, or we can over time take away from that cup to rebuild that buffer for stress that cattle should have. For me, this is an effective description of stacking stress. We're always trying to look at avoiding stacking stress and allowing stress to not fill that cup up all at once. That's what we're looking to. If we do one stressful thing, it might fill up the cup a little bit, but that's way different than doing 5 or 6 or 7 stressful things all at once to where that cup fills all the way up to the brim or overflows. So stacking stress is what we're trying to avoid. So as we look at your operation and we're looking at what makes it high risk or low risk or what's going to start filling up that cup, the big things are what we talked about. Bunk space, pen space, nutrition, husbandry, low stress handling, water, ventilation, vaccine, and treatment protocols. That's a lot to talk about. I don't have the time to go through everything in detail. And we have, if you've listened to this show, we've gone through a lot of it. Some of the topics are quite complicated and they are episodes all on their own or a whole series of episodes to get it figured out right. And we will try to get those sorted out here eventually. There's just so much to talk about. We love cows and there's so many things and so many cool things to talk about. We haven't got to everything yet. You've heard me talk about bunk space a lot. Bunk space is critical in a feedlot. It's critical in a cow-calf operation. It's critical on a dairy. It's very critical anywhere you got cattle. Everyone's got to be able to eat at the same time. So when I'm starting cattle, bunk space should be at a minimum of 18 inches per head. That is what I'm looking for. That puts you in the low-risk category. Pen space, that's a tricky one. We're going to exclude pit barns, slat 4 barns for now, because it's a different game. Usually what we're looking for is 40 square feet per head if we're under a roof. That's a little different if we have a runout. But really, anytime you have a roof, you got to plan for all the cattle being in there at the same time, because it's going to happen, and you need that space to be available. So 40 square feet per head. Nutrition. is a whole series of things at the same time. But bunk space is part of nutrition, and it is a big piece of whether or not you're going to be considered high risk or low risk. So focus on the bunk space for this conversation. Now, basic husbandry. What am I talking about? Mostly I'm talking about keeping cattle clean and dry. Do you need a roof to do that? No. Properly managed bedded packs can provide clean and dry cattle, regardless of the weather. It just takes input in the form of bedding and time. Low stress handling. It's a soapbox issue of mine, but it is a huge source of stress, and it can fill that cup up real fast because every single human interaction is a chance to have it go correct or horribly wrong. So if you can follow the principles of low stress handling and really focus on getting cattle to trust you, that interaction can be neutral. It can even be beneficial, and we can avoid the stress. So put your hot shot down, focus on low stress handling, try not to touch the cattle, build that trust. Water. We're looking at water in the form of linear inches because I think it's easy to measure. 1 to 2 linear inches per head of water. That's what we're looking for. Now, ventilation is similar to nutrition. We could do a whole series of episodes on it. Whatever system you choose to have for ventilation, whether that's natural vent or a tunnel vent or a cross vent, whatever you're going to do, you got to make sure it's working appropriately. Cattle are in that environment 24/7. They're going to experience poor ventilation all the time, not just for 8 or 10 hours, which is what OSHA looks at when we're looking at the people, because they only have to be in a working environment for that amount of time, and then they get to take a break. Cattle are in that environment all the time. So we have to be paying attention to ventilation as well and making sure your whatever system you have is working correctly. That includes, and my one big pet peeve, is curtains. Fresh air has to get in for any ventilation system to work. So if you close those curtains up tight and you're not allowing fresh air in, your ventilation system is failing. Do not close curtains all the way. I'll stop there on the ventilation soapbox. As we've discussed before, when we talk about vaccines, when we talk about treatments, vaccines are not benign. They're safe, incredibly safe, but they take energy. They cause stress. So you have to be careful about when you're doing them and what you're giving. That matters a lot. Talking with your veterinarian will hopefully provide a strategy that is as low risk as possible and contributes to this whole conversation of being high risk or low risk in a way that's beneficial to you. The goal is to time everything and give the appropriate things in a way that we create the least amount of stress as possible. Going through the chute itself is a stressful event, and it only becomes more stressful if you're not paying attention to low stress handling. Treatment protocols, we just went over post-metaphylactic and post-treatment intervals. Those are ways to reduce stress by not pulling cattle that don't need it. Those topics are in episode 213 and in episode 184, if you're looking for that information. So all those things I just went through are things that I look at and add up in my mind to determine whether an operation is more high risk or more low risk. And those things are largely under our control, given that time and money are limited. So they present opportunities for improvement. So if you're buying high risk cattle and you can improve in one of those categories and make your operation lower risk than it was before, you are going to have less morbidity, less mortality, and you're going to capture more of the margin that's available on those high-risk cattle. Now, there's definitely some gray area in this whole mess. You know, I've presented pretty much everything is black and white today, but you can see that it's a sliding scale. You can buy cattle that are right in the middle, and you're not sure if they're high-risk or low-risk. It still benefits you to put them in a low-risk environment as much as you possibly can. But like I said, time and money are limited. So prioritizing everything with the help of your veterinarian to look at, okay, what is the easiest fix that's going to have the most impact? Those are big conversations to have because it lowers the risk of the environment you're putting those cattle in, and it stops you from filling up that cup just a little bit more, and it makes it less likely those cattle are going to experience a disease event or a break. I hope this conversation helps you think about your operation and what kind of cattle you're buying in a way that maybe you didn't before. This is how I think about it. I'm constantly trying to pair things up so that we have the best opportunity for success, not just for the health of the cattle, which is my primary concern, but also for the success of that operation. I want to find those opportunities for improvement, whether we do them all at once or incrementally, but doing them in order of importance based on not just how much impact they're going to have, but how much time and money they take to have that impact. That ratio is important. Some things are a low time, low money investment with a big impact. Those are good to find. Everyone's looking for those. All right. Comments, questions, scathing rebuttals, those go to themooseroom@umn.edu. You can call us 612-624-3610. Check us out on Twitter @UMNMooseroom and @UMNFarmSafety. Check Bradley out on Instagram @UMNWCROCDairy. Check out our website, extension.umn.edu. We'll catch you next week. Bye.